stroll in and go back-to-back for Brisbane.
Wilmot, he keeps it alive and spins it back and might have kicked a ripper. Phenomenal.
Lovely sidestep, goes for home, Hugh McCluggage.
He launches long. Did they touch it? It's through.
He'll need to thread it, and he threads it spectacularly.
Played on to Berry, and a wild Berry hook slots it.
Perfectly executed goal number two. It's been raining goals in the Adelaide Hills today.
Welcome back to the Brisbane Lions Fancast. This time, we are in the same room, in the same place, staring each other eye to eye. It's great.
We're in the dank.
We are in the dank at the moment, but mo the dank. Fresh off the North Melbourne Brisbane performance at Mount Barker, I will say that. I made the mistake of saying Mount Martha last week because I swear I heard on the 7 or Fox coverage it referred to Mount Martha, and I just ran with it and didn't even bother to fact check it. So
you're dead right with that. And I think had we not performed today, the articles write themselves of having not shown up in the Mornington Peninsula at Mount Martha. So,
to be fair, Matt, I did look up Mount Martha. It looks like a lovely place.
It's great. I've actually been there. It's one of about the three places I've been to in Victoria. So, you know, the more you know.
Well, we're sort of stuck again. What do you say when we win? And not only did we win, piled on a big score. 152 could have easily been better. 22 goals, 20. Darcy Fort was unusual in front of goal. He kicked, 12 straight to set the record. And then today, I think he kicked, 0-3, 0-4, maybe something like that.
It seemed like he put his left foot on his right boot and his right foot on his left boot.
One goal, two, in fact, he kicked, but there was an out on the full as well, if I remember correctly.
He did kick a goal, I guess, yeah.
One in the square at the end.
To say that there wasn't a great deal of note-taking here. My notes just say North Melbourne and then dank with an underline. So I don't know if that was is that an environmental thing? Is that describing their performance? Is that ironic?
They got off to a reasonable start that first quarter. I think it ended up level at quarter time, but they we've sort of had slow starts. I've noticed over the last couple of matches. In fact, it's gotten us a while to warm into it. But once we did today, there was no slowing the Lions down. It was good.
I think three goals up, North Melbourne, midway through the first quarter. That was kind of all the sniff they got. They seemed to hang around like a bad smell a little bit, and I think that was down to their accuracy more than anything. Yeah, 9 goals, 2 up until three-quarter time. So that kind of efficiency, kicking for goal, is sort of what can keep you in the game until we decided to go and kick what looks like about 50 goals at the end of the third quarter. So
yeah, that scoreworm has got a steep climb, especially in that third quarter when Charlie came to the party. He was pretty quiet up until halftime and then he ended up putting 3 away in the third quarter, if I remember rightly. 3 or 4.
Yeah, well, question I'll ask you. We sat just before the game, Fort coming in. Ins for the game. We had Fort coming in. We had Rich coming in.
Yep.
Going out was Pryor, as you predicted. Last out first.
Last in, first out. Yeah, LIFO. Yeah. Yeah.
Haven't worked in the mines myself. Gunston out with managed.
Yep.
Is he massively a wino? And that's why they didn't want to take him to South Australia? I don't know. And then we had Jared Lyons on the bench
as the sub, which I thought was going to be, it was an interesting choice because like he plays a pretty specific role. So if you get an injury to a key position player, if Jack Payne goes down with an injury and suddenly you're injecting Jared Lyons in, it takes some serious reshuffling. Thankfully, it didn't happen and we just sort of subbed out Jared Berry, who wasn't having a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. He was actually probably
kicked 2 goals.
Yeah. You? Set up a few as well along the line.
It could have been something that was, you know, maybe that was exactly the situation they envisioned it to be.
Yep.
But for me, yeah, looking at it before the game, you and I sort of said, oh, shit, if something happens to someone else, we could be in a little bit of strife here. Not something I would like to see again. It's a bit too the polar, you know, it's similar to having Fort almost in as the tax sub last year or the medical sub back then, where you're looking at having another ruckman. So Jared Lyons, as you said, very much a centre player.
I thought for sure it would have been Archie or Pryor.
Yeah. Well, the level of versatility, and we did hear from the community, you know, they wanted Archie as a sub for his versatility. I didn't think Pryor deserved to be omitted, but I also did say a few weeks ago that Just because they're omitted doesn't mean they're dropped, so I have to eat my words.
Very true. And I think that's when you put the word managed next to their name.
Yes. Interesting to hear crusty old Damien Hardwick kind of have a similar sort of opinion to what I had about naming your sub, naming your 22, naming your 23, and providing reason for it. So is that something that is to be changed? Who knows? Not really that relevant at this point in time.
No, I mean, it does make it sort of a little bit unnecessarily complicated when you are looking at the teams that are coming out on a Wednesday, Thursday night, whatever, that it's you're dropping three but putting in two and then but then subs written next to one. I wouldn't mind just naming the sub. I mean, what harm's it going to do?
Even if you then change the sub, having one that's there, you know, because what is it? Four emergencies, one of them the sub is coming from.
Yeah.
Are you dropped if you become an emergency? I guess you are, but then, I don't know, like, it seems overly complicated. And is it something to do possibly with the way that the software works in terms of submitting the teams? I think I heard that on a show.
I heard a bunch of, like, the lawyers that would have to rewrite everything because everything's written to 22 rather than 23, so they'd have to, like, rewrite a bunch of, I don't know. It just seems like such a bunch of red tape stuff that's getting in the way of what seems like common sense.
Agreed. And also I heard some interesting things because with what Hardwick said coming out, they were talking about how a lot of the coaches wanted to just go to five to the bench.
Yep.
To me, that is the most insanely dumb, redundant thing that you could do. The whole point is that if you have an injury to a player, you're not a man down.
Yeah, 100%.
What? Like, oh, okay, so you have five on the bench. Someone gets brained.
Yes.
And then you go down to four. Then you've got to play a disadvantage. That's the whole point. So I don't understand how. I think it was Brad Scott on Footy Classified that said that they wanted to go to five on the bench.
Yep.
But to me, that doesn't make a lick of sense. So.
Well, that and we're going to be 12 months down the track and the coaches are going to be like, well, we want six on the bench now.
Yeah. Where does it end?
Yeah, it's just an ongoing thing. I think they tweaked the sub rule ever so lightly to just amend it to what was already happening as well. It was your concussion sub and then whoever gets subbed out, well, they're not allowed to play next week, but like, there were so many loopholes that the coaches were just doing it anyway. So now they're just like, you know what, bugger it. You're going to do it. So let's just amend the rules to fit that.
Tactical sub works. I'm fine with it. I think largely everyone is fine with it. Still not fine with the fact that we were kind of playing eagle eye trying to figure out who actually was subbed off. So
yeah.
Ended up being Jared Berry.
Yep.
But I think we were like, well, is it Berry? Is it Zorko? Is it Fort? I think I was... You're trying to sort of play where's Wally.
Yeah, and then they pop up on the screen and you're like, oh no, it wasn't him, I suppose.
At least it's just a graphic.
Yeah, and it has popped up. It's taking a little bit of time, but that's what you got boundary writers there for, to just feed that information back to the broadcasters. I know you're going to hate hearing this, but I thought JL was pretty good once he came on.
He conspired to have us give up two goals and then things kind of leveled out. So, no, yeah, I mean...
But you've only, I mean, it's all well and good to put together 10, 15 minutes worth of good footy.
Yeah, it keeps him at the level there or thereabouts. Yeah. I mean, as to whether or not you believe that North Melbourne in that quarter at that point of the game is the level, I'd sooner not have him sort of anywhere near the starting team this year because to me that would signify injuries, it would signify lack of form.
Yeah.
Relying on something like that.
Would you rather have Matho in front of JL?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Because I think Matho does more for the playing group than JL does. I think he's a more likable individual and he's more... They've both got a similar level of speed, I think.
And probably ball use too.
Yeah, I think looking at the... I think they described last night in the Sydney-Richmond game, they were talking about the two Warners.
Yep.
Chad and
Corey. Chad and Corey, yeah.
Jesus.
Just jock school.
Yeah, it's like, were you born on a beach?
Yes.
They described the older one as like a quick, you know, petrol engine and the younger one as a diesel engine.
Sure.
They're two very much of the diesel engine ilk.
Yes.
That is Jared Lyons and Matho.
I think future-wise as well, if Matho's getting games ahead of JL, it might dangle the carrot for him to stick around and sign another contract.
Yeah, it is interesting to have the two of them kind of as the first drop for that center position. Yep. So you're looking at Dunkley or Neil, those two being the two that kind of would be the only ones. You can do a little bit with guys that are kind of sitting in the inside and outside. So, you know, McCluggage, Ashcroft, Zorko when he's in the middle, Berry.
Yeah.
You'd all pick different players to replace them with. Whereas with Neil and Dunkley, they're two very specific in the role, you know, inside mids, which is where they are. But like, I don't know. Do you? I'd preference Reece Mathieson.
Yeah, I think I too. I mean, for a number of reasons. I think he's got a little bit of height. I do prefer JL's footy nous a little bit more, and he's want to defend a little bit more. But I think as an overall package, I'd take Reece.
It was interesting to see because we saw last year Neil came back after preseason in 2022 looking significantly lighter, significantly. He was covered the ground so much more.
Yep.
After his Brownlow year, he had a quiet one. And similarly, Rich as well has come back this year. I know he's only played this second game of the season, I think. Second or third game. Either way, I think he's come back lighter and looks like he's moving a lot better. It strikes me as an oversight individually to look at the example set by other players around you to say, I'm not going to treat my preseason like that. I know JL struggled with injuries towards the back end of last season.
Yeah, it was this groin that dogged him, apparently.
Oh, God. If you weren't in the same room, that wouldn't be half as funny. So, I think the ability to kind of take that tangible evidence you've got to then try and cover the ground, I didn't see that. He didn't look like he was covering the ground any better.
No.
Nor any differently to any of the players that have been out playing for three quarters.
Yeah.
So, you know, the lace out hit to Danaher was good, but also he was a meter ahead of his man from the tap out, which is kind of like, bro, you're supposed to be a defensive midfielder. Like, get goal side, that's your role. But I don't know. The less I have to talk about JL this year, the better for me, because I don't want to sound like I'm riding him, because I think he's been very serviceable to the team over the past time. It's interesting. Funnily enough, we talked in the car on the way over here where I said he was good for a couple seasons and then Ben Keyes went out of the team, and you kind of would take Ben Keyes over the past few seasons, particularly after what he did on Thursday night.
100%.
That's all I'll say. I'm done. It was fine.
Well, you did mention covering the ground, and one thing that we did discuss as well, when Fort came in, we're like, is that going to come to the detriment of Joe Danaher, who found himself back in the game via playing that second ruck role? And especially that first half, Joey was covering the ground everywhere. He was taking marks on the wing. He was putting on spoils in the defensive 50 and ended up with 5 goals, 3 in the end. So one of his better games.
It was pretty wild because after the Western Bulldogs game, we have kind of gone for the 2.5 talls, which I think suits us really well.
Yep.
It's bringing the best out of Link McCarthy. It's bringing the best out of Charlie Cameron. Rain is kind of playing us at hybrid mid-size.
Yep.
And I think just generally it's less cluttered in the marking contest, which is allowing the crummers to go. They're getting a lot more to go off of. But yeah, it was really interesting because we sort of said, oh, is Fort, has he been in a centre bounce? And then the next one was Joe and for the centre bounce.
We had three ruckmen in the team essentially because they all shared. I mean, obviously Oscar took a brunt of the hit outs, but I think it probably went Oscar, Joey, and then Ford as the absolute last back. And they played Ford as a designated forward most of the game.
Which is funny, given he had 4 shots on goal.
Yep.
Danaher's had a million. Hipwood's had...
Well, he kicked 4 goals, 2 in the end, I think. So
you've got, 6 shots? Probably you're probably factoring in 1 out of bounds per player on their stat sheet. So Danaher possibly with 9 shots a goal, Hipwood with possibly 7, and then Ford with 4 that we know. That's a lot of shots at goal for the tall element of your forward line.
Well, I mean, Kingy was harping on about it, especially in that last quarter. Just marks inside 50 for us. We ended up with 30+. AFL average 12, he said, and that's where we've been sitting the first 4 weeks. Come out with 30+, I think a lot of them uncontested as well. So, whether that's the sign of the opposition we're playing, probably. I mean, it helps.
All things considered, still 17 contested marks.
It's a good day out.
Like the show? Make sure to follow and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms.
I think the underlying numbers of our game indicates it was a massive win.
And like I said, if it wasn't, that wind played a big part, especially in that last half as well for both teams. But we missed some very gettable shots along the way as well.
Yeah.
Couple of hit the post. I think Zorko on the 3-quarter time siren maybe hit the post.
It would hit the post.
Yeah.
You had a couple of people not treating that left-to-right breeze. Broadcast side to other side.
So, I mean, it could have very easily been a 100-point victory. I mean, 75 points, nothing to sneeze at, and 152 points on the board, 42 shots on goal. You don't say that often, do you? Plus no. The out on the fulls that we're not accounting for as well. So call it best part of 45.
Yeah. 45, oh, you know, and that's looking at almost three times the amount that North Melbourne did. And their efficiency, 12 goals, 5. They were relatively accurate.
And that slimy little Jaden Stevenson just out the back.
I said during the game, I can't wait for him to play on Nick Dacos.
Yeah.
And kick North Melbourne's only 3 goals of the game whilst Dacos gets 704 touches. Because he is the most... We were talking about our small forwards wanting to, a lick of the ice cream.
Yep.
Sort of lurking out the back of packs. He is the most fair weather of fair weather footballers I think I can remember.
Big time.
Don't like him. You said he looks like...
He just looks like the naughty kid at school.
He wants to throw rocks at buses and put...
Yeah,
put coins on train tracks.
Yeah, and just, you know, like, oh, I'll take your sister's Barbie doll and light her hair on fire. Just ratty shit like that.
He'd be like a bull in a china shop in this room. So, aside from that, Rayner took a bit to get going, but he was good when, you know, I mean, he probably did stuff.
Yeah, it was just compared to last week where he was a huge impact on the game. This week he did his bit. He ended up with 2 goals and a classy goal to finish off with as well.
Like, played the wind to perfection.
Good to have a big game from Lockie. He was everywhere. 37 touches. I can't imagine how many of them were contested. I think if this is what TC... No, 13 clearances as well. So he's had a big game, and we haven't sort of needed him to have those big games anymore, but when it happens,
so 17 contested possessions for Lockie.
Yeah.
And I thought that he was particularly good, or noticeably, he was the best player on the field for mine, but yep. He was noticeably the best player on the field up until we kicked that run of goals at the end of the third.
Yeah, and then he could probably afford to take the foot off the gas a little bit, but when the game was there to be won for the 5 minutes that it was... He was by far and away the best player. Dunkley's just going about his business in relative obscurity to an effect. He hasn't really broken a game open, but he's been consistent, that mid-20s possession player, doing his bit. I don't think he's troubled the scoreboard yet, goal-wise anyway.
He kicked a goal in the first game, because I remember we had three... Oh, no, maybe not. Maybe.
I know he kicked some in the preseason, but I can't remember in the season.
Maybe we only had 3 of our 4 new players kick goals in the first game. Because I know we had McKenna, we had Ashcroft and Gunson all get goals in that first game. Maybe I'm getting the pats on the head a little bit confused. Interestingly, Harris Andrews ran the most in that game.
Sure. Speaking of things we spoke about before the game, one thing I did say to you is, like, I've got a bad feeling Nick Larkey's going to do something bad to us today. But we completely shut him and Zoha out. It came at the expense of Charlie Combin, who... literally hoomst.
He had a decent game. Misspeaking Charlie Cameron's.
Yeah.
So, and then I think what he might have gone into the ruck and felt hurt or something.
Yeah, something
and
to that.
They were talking about Coleman. Yeah. So, of not many people or something.
He ends up with only 2 goals. 2 goals, 3, but he presented, took a couple of nice little marks for them. And
oh, he was that guy.
Yeah. He was their best key forward by a long stretch. Nick Larkey essentially unsighted. Zerha did a few little bits and pieces, but nothing dangerous in the forward 50. It was more up on the wings and in through the middle. I feel kind of bad for... And I don't ever feel bad for Ben Cunnington, but he was getting slammed in the comm box.
He was. I think... what was it that David King said? It was... He's having a horror time at the moment.
Yeah.
He's having a horror day out, and it's like... Bro's been doing chemo. I'm pretty sure he's had some more horrific days.
Yeah, he's had a couple of quiet weeks. He got subbed out last week or the week before, and he got off to a pretty poor start. He turned the ball over quite a bit, and Kingy sort of laid the boot in a little bit. But
he's not the youngest fella, is he?
No, he's been around for a minute. Like,
he's been bald forever. So
yeah, he'd be, I don't know, 32, 33. Perhaps I'm putting a couple of years on him, but he's been around for a while.
It's odd looking at some of the other older players in the competition. We talked about managing, or the possibility to manage, Dane Zorko throughout the season. But looking at guys like Jack Riewoldt, whose skin is made of newspaper, some of the other older fellas, Zorko's 34.
I know.
And you would not pick it. I would. I mean, we've said it. He looked 10 years younger.
Yep. Had another great game, especially that first half. And he always uses the ball well. He just makes the right decision. He makes the decision quickly.
I think him not being captain has kind of unshackled him, I suppose, because it, you know, means he's not under scrutiny. He's not setting the tone for the team other than in the way that he should normally have been setting the tone for the team. I know that is word soup at its best, but really, like, he's playing the way that he always should play. I think he was never really supposed to be a captain. He was there basically because there was no one else to be there.
Yeah, best player at the time.
I think, you know, had I been in charge and looking back in hindsight, I would have just made Hodge the captain for those two seasons.
Yeah,
and
probably not bad.
I would look to transition to a more contemporary leadership group. But he's playing probably the best footy he's played, I would say, in two at least seasons.
I couldn't disagree with that. He's using the ball well. He's moving freely. He's breaking lines. His disposal efficiency must be right up there. Maybe not necessarily for this game, but season average, it'd be up there. Like I said, he rarely makes the wrong decision.
Disposal efficiency is kind of, it becomes negligible when you're, I think, above that sort of 75%.
Yeah.
So, and he was in this game, because I think when you're trying to bite off those kicks or you're trying to thread the needle, like that one in the last quarter by Luke Davies-Uniacke, where he's kicked it to the campfire of five Brisbane Lions players, and you're going, is that skill or is that luck? And you go, you know, that's disposal efficiency.
Yeah,
that's an efficient kick, but goodness me, that's a risky kick. And that's where I think in the past, Daniel Rich has had a disproportionately low disposal efficiency despite his number of kicks and his weapon on his kicks.
Yeah, well, I mean, half the time they're dumb kicks down the line.
So it's almost, it's almost like each kick needs to be looked at in isolation of itself, but it's never going to happen. There's too much. It'd be too much to go, well, he's kicking it from there to a 3-on-3 and, you know, the chances of him, you know.
That's some Daniel Hoyne shit you're talking right there.
God, yeah, well. Will Davies-Uniacke be the best player in the AFL next week on...
he didn't do himself any harm today. I thought he was probably North's best on by a long way. He can't be tackled. I don't think we laid a clean tackle on. We laid hands on him, but he broke any tackle that came his way. He's a player you'd love on your team.
I think it's a toss-up between him and Harris Andrews for the most difficult player to tackle in the AFL.
Yes.
The amount of times Harris gets tackled, spins around, he'll like fend someone, but sort of almost like grabbing a toddler and just sort of being like, nah, you go over there, right? And then it doesn't work one out of 20, but it's funny.
But he somehow manages to keep his feet and dish off a handball in the end eventually. It came to his detriment last week against Collingwood where Bobby Hill picked it off.
Yeah, that was a weird one though, because I think had he been pinned, it wouldn't have been holding the ball because he had no prior.
Yeah, but I think he just panicked himself into it. A bit of an outlier. Anyway, the three players that we have spoken about, well, I've brought to the show the last couple of weeks, McCluggage, Bailey and Link, all had good games.
Yes.
Still probably below what they're all... Actually, no, I'll leave Link out of this. I thought he had a really good game, actually. Bailey and McCluggage probably still below what we know they're capable of, but good games nonetheless.
Yeah, I think Bailey and McCluggage do kind of fall victim of their previous output being so high.
Yeah.
Link is one you can definitely measure off of his effort.
Yeah.
And I thought his effort... I think it was even about 3 seconds ago when he's in the center square trying to lay tackles and love that long sleeve shirt. but Bailey's disposal is irking me.
Yep.
I understand he's kind of getting the ball under pressure.
Yeah, but he can't seem to manage to kick a clean drop punt.
Yeah.
One that just spins on end
tumblers.
On end. Yeah.
It's like my first kick with Zach Bailey. McCluggage seemed to be back towards his better decision-making best.
Didn't get pinged from memory holding the ball or caught in a bind. He found himself with a little bit more space than he has the last couple of weeks. He hit some targets inside 50. Yeah, I thought he had a...
He sort of operated between the lines a little bit more.
Yeah.
So rather than being, you know, designated on the inside or on... You know, he was sort of sitting in that kind of hybrid sort of half space between the two lines. He kicked a pretty vintage goal where I think he sort of dropped the shoulder, sent someone with him and then launched it from 45 metres. And also, speaking of the power of friendship, there's two dish-offs to Berry. Although one of them being a tackle, I think.
Yeah, it was a tackle. They got done for a less than 15-meter kick. Huey pounced on it. Ball spilled loose to Bez. Bez kicked the goal. Good thing to see that like the entire team got around Huey for that. Even though like Bez finished off, like everyone got around Huey, so they knew where the goal came from. And it's probably good for Huey's confidence as well to get that.
Yeah, But I think what he 22 odd disposals, I think, and
that's what you need from Hugh. He doesn't have to get 30 touches. If he gets, you know, low to mid 20s, but he uses it well, that's all we need and want from Hugh McCluggage, and that was as close to what we've seen today. So we'll get to the vote soon, but yeah, Link was much better. Bales was much better. I don't think anyone had a poor game. I think it was a pretty even team performance from just about everyone.
Shout out for Budget Eyewear Goal of the Day to Darcy Wilmot.
Oh, my goodness. he had no business kicking that.
No, he put himself out there. He won free kicks. He was pretty handy. I know I said the other week that for reasons that I would have probably sat him out, but I'm glad that he's staying in the team. I'm glad he's doing well. Happy for him because he still is a bloody young player.
Well, 8 games. I mean,
and he was, what, the youngest player in his draft year?
Yeah, I think he just made the cut as well because I think he was born on New Year's Eve as well. So
he's very much a one of a similar drafting ethos where we picked him up that possibly could have gone at a higher number the following year.
Yep.
Similar to Answorth, where Answorth was drafted the year after because of his broken back, I think.
Yep.
And, you know, we picked him up in the 40s.
Yeah.
And he was probably touted to be a top, a first rounder at least. So smart recruitment, always happy with that. But yeah, Wilmot definitely outperformed his numbers. And I don't think anyone can really look at their game and think that they didn't contribute or they didn't do what they needed to do.
No, like I said, even team performance, that's what you want. No complaints other than inaccuracy, but you know, whatever.
We never know the swirling breeze of the cow paddock.
It was nice to see some livestock in the background of the shots, wasn't it?
I think it was funny when we're looking at it and they called a score review and they're looking at the top of the goalpost and it literally looked like there were clouds covering the goalpost. So you're thinking, okay, well, where are we? Also, you know, fair play to them for having the arc connected to Mount Barker. But yeah, old school footy feel.
Yeah, it was quite nice, wasn't it?
Mind it. It was easier to see than at Norwood last evening. Norwood had a few dark spots, some of the pockets. But so far, Gather Round's been pretty cool.
Yeah, I have enjoyed it. And I mean, watching Adelaide on Thursday night was quite fun to watch. I thought Carlton was well below par, but Adelaide played some bloody fun footy to watch. So I'm happy to watch them. I'm happy to see Ben Keys play good footy as well.
Yeah, likewise. I won't forget the time I walked past Ben Keys outside the Gabba when he was quite early on, and it struck me how much taller than I thought he was.
Yeah.
I thought he was sort of a small inside mid, and he was like half a foot taller than me, and I was just like, goodness me.
Make sure you follow us on socials. Just search for BL Fancast.
All right, votes?
Votes for me was 3-0, 2 Danaher, 1 McCluggage.
1 for Huey. Comeback points.
Yeah.
Confidence points.
Slight sympathy points.
Yeah.
Just a bit of a...
I mean, I've been particularly riding him hard the last couple of weeks.
It was a bit of a, here's a little morsel of like jube.
Yeah. Kind of. Here's a little star sticker for you. You keep that up.
No more demerit points.
Yeah. Neil and Danaher, 3-2 for me. The one was the hardest one, I think. Zorko, stiff miss out, but Link, just for his energy and his intent for the entire 4 quarters. I think he was instrumental in a lot of what we got going forward. So one to Link.
Interesting with Link to sort of see his disposals better by hand than by foot.
He's got a handball on him, eh?
Yeah, and the left hand handball, we've seen that time and time again at varying stages.
Yep.
The Polly Farmer, it was to Matheson a couple of seasons ago, but yeah, if he can link his legs to his torso, then you do all right. But
yeah, loved his game, loved everyone's game pretty much. Wilmot was probably our worst, but he had a great game. So if you're doing that week in, week out, you're laughing. We did have a question on Reddit. It wasn't so much a question, but it was more like a, hey, can you guys touch on the twos? Obviously, they're now 4-0. They beat Southport earlier on today. Just having a quick look at the stats because I didn't manage to catch the game. But Reese, 36 touches. Tom Fullerton, 4 goals, 2. Noah Answorth, who they've been playing in the middle, he's got 27. Dev, 25 and 2 goals. Cockatoo, thereabouts, 3 goals with 18 touches. Tunstall looks like he's had a good game. And that's all without JL, who's been probably best on for them the last couple of weeks. So
who was rucking for them? Was it Tommy Fullerton?
Fullerton, but probably Kalen Lane is the designated twos who found himself, 29 hitouts for Kalen Lane throughout the day as well. But
it's pretty good given that they probably had Fort in there to do a bit of the ruck work, and JL being two of their more experienced players. To knock off
Southport,
they were grand finalists last.
Yeah, chronically good team, Southport. I mean, a lot of the talk when the Gold Coast Suns were introduced that they should have just put Southport in. Already got a following, strong club culture, but that's neither here nor there 12 years ago, whatever. obviously, it's good that we've got serious pressure coming from beneath on the team.
Competition for spots is severely underrated.
Yeah.
And I think it's good when you've got... You know, there's a group of players that I would think more as players that are in the mix for the AFL team. Some that are less, but it's good to see the whole team in that sort of sense doing well. It was weird. Going to the Bulldogs game, was it two, three weeks
a year.
I had no idea that the VFL game was on as a curtain raiser. Otherwise, I would have gone.
Yep.
Didn't hear a word about it. Is that probably from lack of looking? I'm not particularly... at all on social media.
Well, there you go. That's probably it. So unless you're really going out of your way to look at the VFL website, then yeah, you're probably not going to find it. Like, the only reason I know is because it pops up on social media every now and then. Well, Darcy Gardner had his first run in the twos as well, so he's looking likely to come back sooner rather than later. Whether he comes straight back in next week after the run, or whether they give him another week or two in the twos to run around and find some form, get some confidence back in his body. It's nice that we're in a position that we probably can leave him to do that for a bit.
Yeah, because it would be him a swap for Joyce.
Yeah.
And at this point in time, it doesn't really look super necessary to be
changing too much. Like, if we don't have to, I mean, I think a lot of people, myself included, would prefer Darcy in that spot. But Joyce is certainly holding his own.
If you've got a mate that loves the Lions, tell them to get the podcast into their ear holes.
Going into next week, Giants.
Giants at Giants Stadium. They're a hard read at the moment.
I've got an angry man for a coach.
Yeah, which is good. They, like, obviously we spoke about it. They pushed Carlton.
They got a free hit this week. Hawthorn.
Yeah. So, I mean, that'll be another test to see how they stand up against a cellar dweller, whether they put them away, similar to what we've done with North, or whether it's a close enough game because they've... But then again, they beat Adelaide, who, as we've seen, playing good footy as well.
Yeah, Adelaide probably took a little bit to click early on the season.
Yep.
You know, working more in fits and spurts. Giants still have a degree of quality, I suppose.
They do. They got, I don't know, sneaky good players.
The thing is, if you held a gun to my head and asked me to name, let's say, a player from each line,
yeah,
I'd struggle. And that's not necessarily due to ignorance. I consume a lot of footy stuff. But they just sort of still barely exist.
Yeah, and they do. I mean, that's West Sydney, I guess. They're not one of the powerhouse clubs that a lot of media's writing about. They're going about their business there.
Well, if in another alternate reality you and I are Sydney Swans fan, God forbid,
yep,
we probably don't know an awful lot about the Gold Coast.
True.
But it's probably living in Brisbane,
yep,
having a vested interest in football in Queensland, that we know more about the Gold Coast than probably a lot of other teams do by kind of osmosis, whereas that seems to be the lack of knowledge for the Giants.
Yep.
So there's always this sort of Grubby Green and Jeremy Thug Cameron before he decided he wanted to be a footballer.
Wow. They probably could have got blown away by Essendon last week. Essendon almost kicked themselves out of 11 goals, 22. But that seems to be the tail of the tape. If we look back at a lot of the games against the Giants, the week before that, 9 goals, 20 from Carlton. The week before that, 14-16 from West Coast, who ended up being...
What's going on here? Are they putting LSD in the water supply or something?
16-14 from the Swans as well. 12-18 from the Crows. Whether that's their style of game, they're forcing teams to take low percentage shots. Maybe that's just the way they're setting up defensively and there's method and design behind it, or whether it's just coincidence.
Well, don't drink the water either way. Laced with something.
We did have another question that came through on Instagram from Jono, who asked, thoughts on the coaching panel as a whole? Now, obviously, Fags is heading that up. We've got Jed Adcock's moved down to defense. Murray Davis has moved forward to our forward line coach.
Big bearded, gigantic Hudson.
Hudson, yeah, he's ruck. And so we've got Cam Bruce as our mids coach. And I think Mark Stone is the senior assistant with Danny Daly. Danny Daly's been around forever since he came over from Richmond. Haven't had much turnover in the in that core group of people. I think Cam Bruce is obviously the newest to that.
It's interesting because I heard Fags pre-season talk about, you know, the wanting to change things up, whether that was just moving Jed Adcock to being a forward to a back line.
Yep.
Why he was a forward coach is beyond me to begin with. He was talking about kind of changing up the methods and the routines and trying not to create a stale environment, which
yep.
is what you want. As far as the coaching group on a whole, like, I'll be perfectly honest with you, I don't have a really a level of knowledge or playing the game at a high level to know what is good coaching and what isn't in that sense, or even to know what they kind of do.
Yeah.
So I don't feel necessarily able to answer that question in an honest way. I can only take it from, you know, either other examples in this sport or in other sports. But sometimes, like, Fagan's an interesting one as a head coach, because in a lot of other sports, you can look at what a coach does in what phase of what they're doing. And I think from him to take us to where we were in 2017.
Yep. So we spooned 2017.
But even before, you know, we came in that year, you know,
we finished second bottom to Essendon. That
The drug team.
Yeah.
Yeah, gotcha.
So that's the only reason we didn't finish bottom is because they were stripped of a roster.
So the progression was 17, we were bottom. I remember funnily enough, I had a flashback of that round 22 North Melbourne game with the straight kicking, because it was about 5 goals to 6 goals or something in the first quarter of that game, and then we got destroyed.
18 was like the year we started 0-9, but our percentage was up there in like the sort of 80-90%. And each week is like, they could be the best 0-5 team ever. They could be the best 0-17.
Yeah, so I think the back half of that season we ended up maybe 15th or something like that, but we had a good percentage and we lost a lot of close games.
Yeah, we did, and we strung a couple of wins together. I think we pinched that first win against Hawthorne, and then I think we went back-to-back, even maybe back-to-back-to-back, against maybe a game against the Suns. There was that game over in Freo in the West, and maybe a game against Carlton, I think.
Somewhere. I remember, funnily enough, in that year coming down to Victoria to record some music down here.
Yeah.
Coming into Victoria for the first time since I'd been here for the 2004 grand final, being the informed team of the competition.
Yeah.
The Lions, despite being set, because I think they had, I think you're right, they had 3 in a row, and I watched them beat Hawthorn at Launceston, which was fun. To go on from that, so 19, obviously we made a massive jump.
Huge jump. I think we finished second in the end.
Second in 19, second in 20. Now, there's kind of mitigating circumstances for both. I think 19's a situation where you look at it and go, we probably caught a few teams by surprise.
And no one was planning for us.
No. So
we did the calling.
The ability to back that up in the following year is really impressive, despite, you know, people say what they want about the Lions playing so many games and not having to move hubs and whatever. And, you know, and you look at it and go, I think Carlton have 2 away games at Marvel Stadium in the next 4.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so you're playing 2 away games at home.
Yeah.
So I don't have any sympathy at all for that. I don't read into what was leveled about the Lions in 2020. 21, slight drop-off. 22, slight drop-off. And I think with that comes from the reputation of the team.
Well, that's it. Chronic finals performers.
Struggling with success, you might say.
Yeah. But it's obviously a team that, all right, we've got to do our homework on these guys now.
And I think there's an element of when you're trying to make minor adjustments at the top level of a team, you do risk kind of upsetting the apple cart a little bit from time to time. And there have been large kind of form slumps and things like that in 21 and 22 season.
Yep.
Sorry, the 2021 and the 2022 season. And obviously, almost you could say the beginning of this season started with a bit of a weird form slump.
Yeah, but I mean, we're not alone in there. I mean, aside from St Kilda, everyone's hiccuped. Even the teams like Melbourne and Collingwood, who everyone's, you know, raving about. They've obviously lost to us. But every other team's sort of gone up and down. But a lot of people are sort of, well, look, in the media, sort of joining the first 4 games of our season with the back half of last season as well. And it is real win, loss, up, down, that sort of stuff. So is it a trend or is it coincidence? And we've, as you said, upset the apple cart again. We've brought in 4-5 new starting 22 players that we've got to learn to play with. We've shifted the game plan, a bit more defensive focused. That stuff is going to lead to inconsistencies.
So I think going back to the question of what do we think of the coaching staff as a whole, I have questions over whether Fagan is a bona fide premiership standard coach.
Yeah, and
it doesn't mean that he can't win one.
Yep.
But it's more so, I think what they're trying to do with the various changes in the personnel is they're doing really like the best they can with what they've got. I actually said, and I don't really want to talk about it, but when the allegations came out the back end of last year, I think I made a comment. I think the Lions will win the premiership next year and Brad Scott will be the coach. And that was well before he'd even been courted by Essendon. That obviously proved to be like insanity. But I still think it was interesting for that to be my kind of knee-jerk reaction for that sort of situation.
Yeah.
Really, really interesting. That's self-analyzing yourself. But can he win a flag? Sure.
He can. The question's going to be there until he does it, obviously, because of his style. Like he's that empathetic man manager, you know, arms around type operator. When maybe we do need that Clarkson, pull your head in, here's the spray when you need it, get the job done. Is that the 1% of difference that we need at the very pointy end of the season? Is that why we have failed the test the last 4 years?
Yeah, and it was interesting to hear pre-season leading in, he was almost resigned to losing that preliminary final against Geelong. Sort of said we'd had two grueling encounters.
Yeah.
And then he sort of said we were probably primed to be picked off. But you don't want that kind of level of resignation to it.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, in the final series last year, there were management mistakes made. I would have had the club stay in Melbourne until they had, you know, from when they came down against the Demons.
Yep.
I would have kept them there. I wouldn't have flown them back up. You know, we've seen the effect that can have on the aforementioned 2004 Premiership team. So there would have been plenty of people down here that would have said, train at Edinburgh Gardens.
Yep.
Treat yourself like you're Fitzroy. You're wearing the Guernsey for this fortnight. Don't create this up and backness of it. I think Fremantle were prepared to do the same thing. They were prepared to stay in Melbourne. So, you know, it's less of a flight, as you would know. But I think there's little things that you're like, why are you doing it like that?
Yeah, and I guess we'll never know. I don't think anyone was going to stop Geelong that day or the following week. But
that was a great game for about 3 seconds. That McInerney hit out to Neil and then he ballooned it to an intercept and you were like, yep. And it's gone.
Yeah. But such was the power of Geelong in that fortnight. Like I said, I don't think anyone was going to stop them. Your mum sent through a question.
My mum.
Your mum.
Mrs. Shaney Stiller.
Yes.
Although I have been told that was not the case.
Oh, really?
Mum's getting a bit old.
She did say, what's the go with the baggage handler, Hugh McCluggage? Where's his best spot? What's going on with him? And we've spoken about that the last couple of weeks. I think he answered some questions today. If he can continue that, like, hopefully, once again, that's not a flash in the pan. Yep. We saw Joe back it up, which is something we put on notice last week. Like, that's the standard. I think Eric did the same as well today.
Yeah. Just to give a little bit of, you know, I think McCluggage is kind of, he's in an awkward spot because his inside mid spot has been kind of filled by Ashcroft and Dunkley. And then he's also not sort of playing as a designated winger because they're Berry and
Wilmot, yeah.
So it's kind of like he doesn't, I'd almost sort of say Bailey's in a similar position where the two of them are struggling to sort of have clear direction of where they're playing. Are they playing as a half forward flanker coming down to impact contest? You know, they're not playing in the half back line. Maybe they're not being coached as well as they could be.
And maybe we've been asking these questions about them, whether they're probably asking the same questions to themselves because they're sort of a bit sick of getting shuffled around.
Because could you tell me what position Zach Bailey's starting in?
No, but he seems to be getting a lot of ball towards that half back line.
Yeah, and same with McCluggage.
Yeah,
like what position are they starting in? You don't really know, and starting positions are definitely not the be all and end all.
No, it's just a bit of a merry go round at the moment.
Yeah, but you know, for me, they're not starting in the half back line because how can they? You've got McKenna and Rich and Kadeen Coleman and like. What's going on? So maybe it's an element of trying to.
It's just a bit of a like everyone's just rolling around when a kiddie comes off, then someone like a Bailey floats down or Wilmot floats down and Bailey goes to the wing. It's just like, which I suppose is another thing that Fags has said he wanted players that can play in multiple positions. So maybe they're putting them to the test. Like a lot of the talk was about Rayner going back and that was obviously well publicised and well spoken about because it was such a dramatic change. Maybe he's doing the same thing with Bailey and McCluggage. We're just not noticing as much because it's in between the arcs.
Yep. Fair point. Well, thanks for the question. Send more.
Yeah, absolutely. Socials, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. You can jump on the Discord, Reddit as well. There's usually posts that go out a couple of times a week soliciting for you guys to get involved. So feel free to do it. It's we've got three this week, so that's great.
If anyone wants to become the king of the jungle and moderate the Discord, I'm accepting applications because I have got no idea what I'm doing.
Get in touch anytime. Shoot us an email at blfancast@gmail.com or join the Discord.
Well, I'm not going to do what I did last week and look too far ahead into the future, but you know, I will touch
on... What do you reckon about round three, 2027?
I think we're a shoo-in.
Is it too early to do? I don't think I want to do ins and outs. I don't think I want to look at the team and say I want to change this, because after a 700-point win,
the only change I can foresee is Gunner for Joyce. But like we touched on, I don't think we have to pull the emergency cord on that one just yet. Wait till Dizzy gets a bit of fitness back. So there's no rush, which is nice. Yep. To not have to rush him back in. If like Joyce is playing so poorly, that's like, oh God, we need to get Darcy back. But he's holding his own.
Yeah. For me, just change the tax sub.
Yep.
Answorth or Pryor is a tax sub for me.
Yeah, and Answorth's been playing well since he's been back in the two, so hard to disagree with that. Archie is obviously always constantly knocking down the door. So I think, yeah, no changes, maybe just the tax sub, yeah.
Good to see Archie kind of just involved in the first team. I wasn't sold on him initially when he came from the Gold Coast. I thought he was a bit... It seemed to take a while for him to get to learn the Lions style.
That, and he was constantly getting... Like, from day one, he was getting shuffled around half back wing, half forward, deep forward some weeks as well.
But I think in the last season just gone, 2022... I always forget what year we're in. In last season, before he got brained by Cripps, I thought he was our toughest player.
Yep.
Toughest in the contest and put his body on the line for the team. And that was shown by what happened.
And the guy gets a Brownlow medal out of it.
Yeah, well, I didn't hear him thank his...
his lawyers.
I think that it probably would have shown a bit of awareness there, but,
yeah,
you know, let's not...
I mean, Paddy Cripps, he's a player that I'm happy to see him walk away with a Brownlow medal at the end of his career, just not last year. Other year.
I think today you blamed Cripps, I blamed Jared Lyons for getting 3-1 game, so anyone but Lachie Neale's fault.
Correct.
Just to rub salt in the wound, Sandy Roberts, the whole night, called me Big Jeff Brown. Jeff, did he? Oh, no.
Obscure player. Here's one for you. And he was the whipping boy for a long time for us in that sort of... In that period we were talking about, that sort of 2015 to 2017. Marco Paparone.
Oh, Paparone.
Yeah. The pizza man. Went on to start a clothing label, Scaly Mates. I'm not sure if that still exists. I'm not keeping up to date with M. Paparone these days. But he would have played almost a hundy, I would imagine, over his career. He was sort of in and out, very prone to mistakes. But by the time he was starting to come good as a quasi-reliable defender...
He was playing as a sort of... as a bit of a bigger-bodied half-back
flanker. Yeah.
It was him and Sam Mays.
Yeah.
And we've talked about Sam Mays, but the idea of Sam Mays and Marco Paparone being the two that are disposing the ball going forward.
It's not good, is it?
In a you know, area of time, we've got Adam Sard and McKenna running around for Essendon and players like that. You're going, yeah, there's a gulf in quality. So it looks here like he played 55 games.
Oh, wow.
He did play a little bit up forward as well. He listed as a utility.
Yeah, there you go.
So
I'm sure that's what Callum Archie falls under these days as well.
High draft pick.
Really?
23.
Yeah, that's too high. I mean, good on him. Once again, every week we say it, he's had a much better AFL career than I ever had. So here we are just sort of almost hanging shit on the bloke. But
it's weird, you know.
Once again, he doesn't get a game in any other team during that time.
Probably not. But, you know, GWS existed back then under Kevin Sheedy, so maybe.
Yeah, true. Although they were stacked for talent then, before they all got squeezed out and went to Carlton.
Yeah, Marco Paparone. It's interesting. These ones that, you know, they get brought up and you're like, I haven't thought about that guy in like probably since his second to last game.
Yep.
Yeah, poor fella. He was, you know, he had some of that kind of cool Italian style hair, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he had the curls going on.
And I think he wore a headband at one point in time.
Did he really?
So maybe he was a bit of a trendsetter. Seen a lot of that nonsense, particularly from the Bulldogs.
Yep, them and Geelong. If you've got shoulder length blonde hair and a headband, you're a guaranteed starter for Geelong.
I think they almost do their draft profiling based on that. You well, can sort of pick it when you go through, you know, when it comes towards sort of TAC Cup time, you're like, the Geelong fetish is going to be... I don't know. Marco Paparain.
He's our obscure player of the week. Keep your eyes peeled at Facebook. Hopefully we can get a video highlight of him. Couldn't find one for Ben Fixter last week.
Yeah, Marco Paparain probably turning the ball over. Long range, kick up the wing, dropping short. He was, surprisingly with Marco Paparain, as I heard he did quite well in whatever the Supercoach fantasy stuff.
Really?
Because he got a lot of disposals.
Jeez.
So.
Well, if he's distributing the ball off halfback, then yeah, I guess so.
We did speak about distributing the ball and it happening, you know, it being left to your lesser skilled players.
Yep.
Maybe that's why we conceded so many points. So, poor guy. But hopefully he's doing all right. I'm sure he probably is fine.
Yeah. Like we said last week, hope he's well. Yeah. well, good to get another win, but a big win under the belt. We spoke last week about how we wanted to sort of treat North Melbourne with a bit of disdain, bullying them and let them know, like, yeah, there's a difference between where we sit and where you sit. And I think we did that. Once again, we had the ability to probably do it a little bit more, but beggars can't be choosers.
No, I think conditions-wise, you know, you don't want to be kicking it just over 50%, but...
And almost importantly enough, we walked away from a suburban footy ground without any knees giving way or
you did
any detriment.
Just as we're, you know... But I suppose if everyone tempts fate,
yeah,
who's really tempting fate? As long as you didn't get like a blade and get some blood out and like a weird pentagram, I'm sure we probably would have been fine. So,
big win onto the Giants next week. And then I think is it Carlton the week after, which is going to be a fairly hefty test down at Marvel.
Funnily enough, I probably think...
No, Freo at home. So, speak of up and down, they've been more down than up. Managed to pinch a win against the Gold Coast, who pissed one away.
I think you're looking at that going, well, if you can beat Giants, beat Fremantle, it's probably looking at more of a test for Carlton at that point in time.
Well, depending on how their next couple of weeks go as well, whether they've got a couple of soft kills, what they've got, they're coming off a game off West Coast at Optus as well, so it'll be a tough road trip if nothing else for them. They've got St Kilda at Marvel the week before on the Sunday.
Yeah, that's one of their away games.
I think that about wraps it up for this week.
Yeah, sick of the sight of you, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah. I'll f*** off then.
But I do want to leave you on one thing. You little beauty!